Additional Encore audio archive recordings are available at www.12steptapes.com. We request you not upload this recording to the major free outlets. We are happy to allow free listening on our own site with a subscription service. Contact us on www.12steptapes.com for more information.
Our speaker for today, along with our hostess greeter, speaker Michelle from Tustin, California, and our hostess greeter is Ina H.
Hi, my name is Michelle, and I'm definitely an alcoholic. Thank you so much for being here. I want to thank Joni for asking me to speak, and Diane, I know you had a hand in that for sure. Thank you so much. truly, this is not my story. This is God's story, and it's God's story of his redemption in my life. And if you're sitting in this room, you probably have a passion for H&I like I do, or you wouldn't be in this room right now. You know, the Big Book talks about the jaywalker, right? The Big Book says he gets a thrill out of skipping in front of fast-moving vehicles. He enjoys himself for a few years in spite of friendly warnings. Up to that point, you would label him a foolish chap having queer ideas of fun. Luck deserts him, and he is slightly injured several times in rapid succession. I am that jaywalker. I am absolutely that jaywalker. You know, for me, it started out with, a little 30, 60, 90 days in the county jail, right? And with every arrest came more time. And just like, you know, anything in our life, the consequences get a little greater and a little greater. For the jaywalker, it was initially a fractured skull. And then he moved on to break his arm. And then he broke both of his legs. And then he broke his back, right? The book says, like, however intelligent we may have been in other respects, where alcohol is involved, we are strangely insane. You know, the insanity for me was that life seemed the absolutely completely normal one. You know, I've had conversations with family members who are like, tell me a typical day in your life. And I'm like, well, I don't wake up, I come to, if that. You know, I'm probably going to rob somebody, right? I'm probably going to steal something from someone somewhere, probably break into your car. You know, I'm probably going to go to a store and steal something, not because I don't have the money in my pocket, but just because, right? It's what we do. And my family would look at me and say, that's insane. Not to me. To me, that was just a normal day, you know? And, I stand before you, a woman who once had 39 felonies and 4 prison terms. I've been to every women's institution in the state of California. Some of them no longer house women. VSP is no longer a women's prison, but I was formerly a resident there. I don't say this with pride. I say this because God can do amazing things in the human heart, right? And I am living, breathing proof that God can change the human heart. Alcohol took me to some very dark places. And I don't just mean a prison cell, right? I mean some dark places in my head, you know? And if you're sitting in this room, I know you can probably identify with that, you know? My disease took me to a place where, you know, I thought I was a good mom, right? I'm such a good mom. You know, I'm only going to drink my alcohol and sell my drugs while he's asleep. He doesn't really know what's going on, right? So I'm shocked and appalled when I'm pulled over by the police and they're removing my child from my care. Like, don't you know what a great mom I am? And the truth is, I'm here to tell you, after working all 12 steps in a row with a sponsor, thank God. Thank God they removed that child from my care. They rescued him from me is what they did, and rightfully so, because that child deserved to have a mom that was present and capable of caring for him, and that wasn't me at that moment, you know? And what I can tell you is You know, for me, it starts with the obsession, right, of the mind. It'll be different this time. I'm just going to drink. I'm not going to use, right? I'm just going to use, not going to drink. I'm just going to sell it. I'm not going to use it. And then I land in prison every single time, you know? I am that girl when I get pulled over, I know where I'm going. There's not ever a question in my mind. And so to me, like, there's never any tears. Like, that sickens me. You know, if you're going to do the crime, you're going to do the time, right? And so when I get pulled over, for me, it's a matter of how many years this time. How many years is it going to be? You know? And the sad part is that I got to the point where I was okay with that. It was like, well, I needed a break anyway, so here we go. You know? I hate the what it was like part. I hate this part. It's just word vomit, right? what it was like, we know what it was like, right? And it was never my fault. You know, it was never, ever my fault. It was always because I hung out with these men, right? These men.
It's the men's fault.
It's totally their fault. I sold my drugs by the pound, and yet I hung out with these men who were smart enough to put the G ride on the hotel registration, right? So when the door's getting broke down for the stolen car and I've got pounds of drugs in the room, I'm like, it's totally your fault, you know? I just could never, ever take responsibility for my part in anything, and thank God for those steps, honestly. I got to the point in my life where I wasn't welcome in my home. I wasn't welcome in my family's home. All my family is in law enforcement. My cousin's the chief of police for Buena Park PD, you know. My dad was a firefighter. And everybody in my family was involved in law enforcement or sheriff's department. And I was never welcome at their family functions. You know, and I remember getting arrested on Christmas, you know, in Buena Park, and my cousin's like, you're an embarrassment to me, you know, and that hurt, you know, that hurt. Not the arrest, just the words, you know. What happened for me is God's grace, honestly. I was arrested one more time, and, you know, I'm from Orange County, so just to disclose, the laws changed in Orange County, and if you get arrested in Orange County and you're doing anything 10 years or less actual time, you're doing it all in the county jail now, unless you hit a cop or something, you know, violent like that. But so my last arrest was, and here's the thing, like, you know, I can do time really well. You know, we have yoga in the gym on Saturdays over at CIW. There's programs, there's classes. You know, it looks like a college campus, mm-hmm. You know. And so I can do prison time, no problem. But when you stick me in the county jail for my last term, and unfortunately, like, I am that girl who, you know, I get a little violent sometimes. I can't quite keep my hands to myself. So they don't put me in general population anymore. They put me in the IRC, which is a 22-hour lockdown facility in a two-man cell. And that's where I do my time. And so my last arrest and conviction was all done in the county jail. And that wasn't a good place, you know, for me to be in my head one more time doing a substantial amount of years, you know. And you know, for me, honestly, what happened was God began to work in my life without my knowledge and without my permission. You know, I had a knock. If anyone in this room's ever been incarcerated, you know that distinct sound of the key on the glass door, right? It's a very distinct sound. And it was the officer saying, "Hey, inmate, we have a class for you." And I was a little taken back. I said, a class for me? Why, thank you. I think my initial response was, you must be mistaken. You don't let me out of my cell, and you certainly don't let me attend classes, and you definitely do not let me mix with other inmates. And she said, no, I had no idea what that was. H&I is putting on some, you know, trial class thing. Turns out what they're looking for is the repeat habitual criminal, the one who absolutely cannot possibly be rehabilitated, the bottom of the barrel. You have to have certain types of charges. You have to have a certain length left on your sentence. You have to be able to complete all of the course. You have to let them track and follow your progress when you're done, when you leave here. And turns out you qualify. All I heard that deputy say to me was, you're going to let me out of my cell for a couple of hours a day, twice a week. Yes. Please sign me up. I would love to participate in your class. Right? All I wanted to do was go to the class, pass things from other inmates, get things, get out of my cell. I had zero desire to be sober. You know, I had attended an AA meeting one time when I got a DUI way back when. Took me one AA meeting to realize that it was a cult. They held hands. They said weird chanty prayers. I wanted none of that. I was just convinced that Alcoholics Anonymous was for, you know, older men who were homeless and who pushed shopping carts and drank out of brown paper bags. You know, that's what AA was for. And that was not me. Because don't you know, I am so much better than that, right? I'm not homeless because I have two hotel rooms. I have a car to sleep in. You know what I mean? I'm doing big things. So I was just convinced that it was not for me. And the deputy asked me, do you want to know what the class is? And I said, nope, I don't care. Sign me up. I'll do whatever, you know. It turns out that it was a big book study one night and a 12 and 12 the next night. And it was put on by Orange County's H&I, Hospitals and Institutions. They asked the Sheriff's Department if they could have a list of people who met certain qualifications and track their progress. They wanted to see if they could make a difference in just one inmate's life. Mm. Just one. And here I am. Here I am. you know, what really, really happened for me is if you're sitting in this room, you more than likely you have a panel somewhere. And I just want to tell you, I want to encourage you, if you're going to these panels week after week, month after month, and you're like, no one's listening, no one's getting it, and you're frustrated, and you're thinking of quitting or dropping your panel, God, please don't. Please don't. I went to those panels week after week, month after month, and I sat in the back of the room, in the very back of the room, in the back corner, and I wanted no part of it. I had no desire to be sober, and everything that they said, I made fun of them. You know, I openly mocked those beautiful people who came in and gave of their time, and I asked them, why did you not kick me out? I mean, I was so disrespectful. And they looked at me and they said, sweet girl, we saw something in you that you couldn't see in yourself yet. And I said, what was that? And they told me, hope for a better life. You know, and I am so grateful today that they never kicked me out, that they let me come week after week and be rude and disrespectful. And if that's your experience today, hold on, because you're planting a seed. You have no idea who's going to come behind you and water it and help it grow. But keep coming. You know, I genuinely thought that those people were paid, you know, like teachers are paid. I had no idea that they were there. I had no idea of the process you have to go through to even get into that facility. All I knew was that they were talking to me about something that seemed completely foreign to me. And that was about having a different life, a better life, a different way to live, you know? And to be honest, what happened for me was there was a couple of women who came in. It was a sponsor and a sponsee. And they came in together and did their panel together for the book study. And they would always give us a few minutes before class started to talk amongst ourselves, like get it all out, talk, take a few minutes, pass your whatever, you know. It was their hope that when the book was read, we would pay attention. And that didn't really happen for me, but, you know, one day it occurred to me, you know, because I'm an alcoholic with alcoholic thinking, I wonder what they're talking about while we're talking. You know, and immediately my head goes, they're probably talking about me. They're for sure talking about me. I'm going to listen and hear what they're saying about me, right? And I say this completely with her knowledge and her permission, right? There was this one woman who would come in. She had a bunch of tattoos, and her name was Punk Rock Tara. And so when she would come in and talk, I paid a little bit more attention, you know, because I looked at her and I thought, yeah, I probably would have partied with you, you know? And she came in with her sponsor, this little Debbie. She was this beautiful, sweet Christian lady, and I just thought, totally not a match. And I remember her talking about slamming gutter water. Mm. And I remember her sponsor turned to her and said, "My God, Tara, I just love you so much. Look how far you've come." And I remember thinking, my God, I want that. I want another woman to love me despite all the things I've done in my life. I had done some really horrible things I hadn't been convicted of, things I haven't been caught for, you know, and I thought, my God, I want another woman to love me like that, that unconditional love, you know, and the truth is I looked for it in every relationship, in every drug, in every drink, right, and I could never find that. And I walked up to that woman and I said, "Excuse me, I want what you have. I want what you have." And I didn't mean her sobriety, you know. And she looked at me and she said, "Sweet girl, if you want what I have, you have to be willing to do what I did to get it. Are you willing to go to any lengths?" And I lied and I said, "Yes, absolutely." No idea what that meant, you know. And I asked that beautiful woman to be my sponsor. She is my sponsor today. She is the only sponsor I've ever known, other than Al-Anon, but that's not what we're here for today. I remember that there was one man specifically, Mr. George Rigby. He walked up to me one day, and he handed me a book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he said to me, "You're in here every week, twice a week, and you're rude, and you're obnoxious, and you're disrespectful." And I said, "Yeah, that's right, I am, because I am a convict, and I am a junkie. I am not an alcoholic." And he said, "Okay, well, I'm going to give you this book right here. I'm going to challenge you to read it cover to cover. And you read this book cover to cover all the way through, and then you come back to me, and you tell me again that you're not an alcoholic." And I recall I snatched that book right out of his hand super fast. No problem. I'm gonna read your stupid book. I'm gonna read your book and I'm gonna find the loophole, right? Because to me it was like, you know, in my head at the time, right, I was like, you know, the Bible says that God created the earth in 7 days or 6 days and rested on the seventh, but dinosaurs walked the earth for thousands of years before man. Loophole, right? And I thought that the big book was like that. I thought I was going to find some loophole where I could come back and say, this is not right. I don't qualify. And he told me to take my little colored pencils in my cell and to read that book cover to cover. He said I could replace the word alcohol with whatever my drug of choice was if I so desired. But if I got real honest with myself, you know, there was a time where I was given the opportunity to reunite with my son through social services. And I took my son while in a program to a Dodger game. and I drank a beer at that Dodger game while I was in a program for women and children that had a zero tolerance. And that drink cost me my son. So when I got real honest with myself, why could I not just take it or leave it alone, right? So I read that book cover to cover, and I came back to that man, and the whole book was highlighted. And I said, "Excuse me, sir, I have some questions for you." Some questions. I had literally written out like a whole page of questions, you know. And he opened his arms wide, even though we're not supposed to hug inmates. And he hugged me, and he said, "Welcome. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, the truth is today there is a solution for your problem." And that is absolutely what I have found here. You know, H and I helped me turn my mess into a message, right? What H and I did is you guys put my hand in the hand of God's, and you allowed me to give him permission to work in my life. And that's the most beautiful thing that could have ever happened for me. You know, I tried it every which way. I tried to get the solution through every other method. And the truth is, none of it worked. None of it worked. You know, I worked my steps while incarcerated. And then I began to take other women through their steps while incarcerated. And for me, you know, truly my moment of surrender came upon my release, right? And my sponsor said, "Okay, you know, you're getting ready to get released. Like, what are you going to do?" And I'm like, "What do you mean when I do? I'm cured. I got this. I am good. I worked all 12 steps. I've sponsored this many women. I've taken them through their steps. Like, I got this." And she looked at me and said, "No, sweet girl, you do not got this." You know, she said, "What you know how to do is you know how to live a criminal lifestyle. You know how to live an alcoholic lifestyle. What you don't know how to do is be a productive member of society." She said, "If you'll allow me, if you'll take my direction, if you'll take my hand, I will show you what that's like, but you have to be willing to take my direction." And I said, "Well, what is that going to entail?" Right? And she said, "Well, you're going to leave this facility and you're going to go to a program." And I'm like, "A program? I've been here for like a really long time, you know. I'll go, but it's got to be co-ed, you know, because I've been here for years. I'm like, I need that, you know." And she said, "Oh no, sweet girl, you are extra, you know, you are extra, and you need to be with all women." And I was like, "Oh, great." You know, and I really, truly believe that was my moment of surrender, is going into a low-bottom indigent recovery center. It was called The Villa in Santa Ana, and it was all women. And I met there some of the most amazing women who I started my recovery journey with today. I remember being in that facility, and at the time, there was approximately 36 of us women. You know, and we're sitting in a circle, and it's kumbaya, and the woman who's teaching the class said, "I want you to look to your right, and I want you to look to your left." And out of all 36 women in this room, in this program at this moment, one or two of you, maybe, is going to make it. You're going to leave this facility. You're never going to drink or use again. You're going to go on to live happy lives, one or two, maybe. And I remember that I looked to my right, and I had my best friend, Lindsay, and I remember I looked at Lindsay, and Lindsay looked at me. And it's so funny how we have different perceptions of that moment, you know? Like, my best friend, Lindsay, you know, looked at me, and she's like, "It's going to be me. I'm going to make it," you know? And I remember looking at her thinking, "I am so screwed. It is not going to be me. There's no way it's going to be me," you know? And I'm here to tell you, out of all 36 of those women, her and I are the only two. And most of those women are not alive today. Mm-hmm. You know, my sobriety date is 4/8/2016. Now that's 7 years. It's not a lot of time, you know. And I've watched a lot of those women die. I've watched them go in and out and back into that same treatment center. I've watched women lose their children, and this disease is cunning, baffling, and powerful. You know, and what I can tell you is God's grace. Right? God's grace. The one thing that I said I always wanted to do while I was incarcerated was at one point I remember I looked at those people who came in of H&I and I said, you know what? I'm going to be one of you someday. Someday I want to be one of you, you know? And they would tell me the same thing. Every volunteer that came every time, they're like, we meet at the Garden Grove Alana Club the second Sunday of every month. We're there from 4 to 6. Come down. As soon as you get released, come down. This is where we meet, you know, and our H&I is split into two groups. It's so large that we have to split into two groups. Like, so the 4 o'clock is for anything that's like a hospital or doesn't require a clearance. And then the 6 o'clock for us is anything that requires a clearance. And I remember that that was huge for me. Like, I wanted to be them someday, and I showed up at the Garden Grove Volano Club when I got released, and I walked up to some of the people who knew me so well for so many years, and I was like, hi, do you remember me? And, you know, it was the same man who handed me that book, and he looked at me, and he's like, I mean, you kind of look familiar. You know, we don't look our best when we're incarcerated. He's like, you kind of look familiar, but, like, I can't quite place where I know you from. And that was a huge compliment to me, you know? And I reminded him of who I was, and he immediately was like, come with me. You know, he took me by the hand, and he showed me what H&I was all about. He volunteered me for every position available. You know, I got railroaded into a bunch of things. But the truth is that when I accepted that board position as chair for H&I, it was probably one of the highest moments of my life. Yeah. To be responsible to be the liaison between a facility and the volunteers who go in is such an honor, you know. It's a position you're supposed to do for 2 years. I did it for 4. because if you know me, I am extra in everything I do, you know. I can't even have a little bit of salad dressing. Like, I need a bucket, like a bowl of salad dressing. I can't do anything a little bit. I went on to become the liaison for Chino Institution for Men, and then Chino Institution for Women. And that was such an honor and a privilege, you know, to go back into one of the same facilities where I had formerly been incarcerated, to step back onto that college campus, right, and look around and realize that today I'm not getting strip searched. You know, today I'm going to walk in and I'm going to walk out wearing the same clothes, you know, and they fit the same, you know. such an honor and a privilege, you know, because when I speak to these inmates, I can tell them I have literally been in your shoes, worn your clothes, been where you are, sat where you've sat, and I'm here to tell you that there is hope for a better life and that I am proof. You know, I then got my clearance for Tehachapi. Thank you. If you don't have clearance for Tehachapi, you can see Diane right here. that's an amazing facility to walk in, and to walk into a gymnasium filled with men. Most of them lifers. All with amazing stories. I'm a firm believer. I never, ever ask an inmate, hey, what are you here for? It's none of my business. That's between them and God. I never want to know their charges. I don't want to know their crime. I don't want to judge them. God knows I don't want to be judged for the things I've done. I make it a point that I treat them with the utmost respect, the way that I wanted to be treated when I was in their shoes. I make it a point that I love them from a distance, to the best of my capability, because there is nobody beyond redemption. Not one single person. And I believe that all people can be used by God in some special way to touch a heart and to change a life. You know, if those people from H&I didn't have faith in me, like I have faith in them, I wouldn't be standing here today. They showed me the love of God and of another human being, and it changed my life. And I would be remiss if I didn't do that for someone else. You know, when I got my brown card, if you're in this room, you probably know what a brown card is, right? Right? Right, okay. So your brown card is where you are able to enter into a prison facility with your vehicle and roam about the prison all by yourself, unescorted. And that was huge for me. You know, I my rap sheet is 11 pages, small typed, front and back. 39 felonies. Wow. I lost track of the misdemeanors because I couldn't count them all. And when they cleared me for my brown card to go unescorted into a prison, that was huge for me. Huge for me. And that they trusted me enough to go into a facility with my car and be unescorted was huge for me. Everything good in my life is a direct result of another member of Alcoholics Anonymous taking me by the hand and walking me through a process. You know, at one point I was told about, there's a program in Orange County, it's called the New Leaf Program. It's put on by the Public Defender's Office, and it basically, what they do is you petition the judge to take your felonies and reduce them down to a misdemeanor. And I applied for that because someone else in Alcoholics Anonymous said, hey, I did this, you should do this. And I filled out the paperwork. It's a lot of paperwork. You know, I filled out the paperwork, and I got some character reference letters, and I submitted my paperwork, and the judge, you know, looked through it and came back, and he's like, you know, I'll take these four, is it Kevin, four or five?
Six.
Oh, six. Thank you, six. Six. My best friend, Kevin. So I took the six, and he took six, and he said, I'll reduce these six. You know, and I remember thinking, like, six? Like, bro, I got 39. What is six? What does it matter? Six less felonies. What is that? Like, this was a waste of time. And, you know, thank God my sponsor was like, no, no. She said, let me ask you something. She said, how big is your God? I said, well, my God's pretty big. She said, okay, so if your God is pretty big, then what's the next indicated step? I said, I don't know. Let me make a phone call. Let me find out. What can we do? And I called the public defender's office, and she said, well, you can wait 6 months, and then you can resubmit the paperwork again, and this time you can ask to go before the judge and speak for yourself. And I said, then I want to do that. And I did that. And I gathered together letters of all my gate clearances from prisons, and people from H&I wrote character reference letters for me, and I submitted the paperwork again, and I went before the judge, and I remember that the judge came out of his chambers after reading all the letters, and he got on the bench, and he said, Miss Rice, I'm going to do something for you today. And I immediately was like, oh my God, he's going to lock me up again. Here we go. They're like, oh, you're okay. You know, he said, no, Miss Rice, I'm going to do several things for you today. And I said, okay. And he said, so first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to go through every felony that I can, and I'm going to reduce them to a misdemeanor. And I'm like, what do you mean that you can? Like, you know, because I'm an alcoholic, so I always, like, immediately focus on, like, oh, my God, it's all pointless. It's all worth nothing. Like, if there's even one felony left, what's the point, you know? And he's like, hold on. He's like, you have some charges on your record that by law, if it was within my power to do so, I would reduce them. But by law, I cannot. Like, you just have some real serious ones that can never go away. And I was like, oh, okay. And he was like, so then I'm gonna do something else for you, right? So first they went through every felony. And he asked, you know, the judge would say, this is what the petition is. And the guy stood up. He's like, we object. And he's like, overruled, you know. And they went through all of those. And they reduced the ones that they could. And then he said, I'm going to do something else for you today, Michelle. I'm going to I'm going to go back through every case you've ever been charged with. I'm going to withdraw your guilty plea, and I'm going to dismiss every single case. Yeah. So they did that. It took like 20 minutes. And the judge said, okay, you're good here. You got any questions? And I was like, yeah, I got some questions. What just happened? And he said, well, basically what I did is I just expunged your record. And I said, okay. And he's like, so basically what this means now is if you're asked on any kind of a job application, if you've ever been convicted of a felony, you can say no now. And I was like, really? And he's like, yeah, do you have any more questions? And I said, yes, I do. Can I buy a gun? That's all I want to know. Can I buy a gun? You know, and he's like, oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember him saying to me, like, literally, nobody's more deserving of this than you. And I was like, wow. You know, so immediately, right, immediately, because I'm an alcoholic, I want every license you ever told me I couldn't have, right? My whole life, they were like, nope, you can't be a realtor. You can't have a real estate license because you're a felon, right? No, you can't be a notary because you're a felon. So I immediately, my record was expunged on a Friday, and on Wednesday I was in real estate school. The first license I got was my notary. I got my notary license, and you know, you walk up to become a notary, right? And you, there's a part on the application ask, because the judge did say, he's like, if you're asking for any kind of a like notarial license or any kind of a state or government thing, it's always best to disclose, even though your record's been expunged. Certain people can see it. So you know, I was careful to, when it asks about the felony, I disclosed. And then it asks, you know, they give you this super small space to list your felonies, you know? So for me, it's like, see attached, you know? And then when I walk up and everybody's handing two sheets to the notary guy, and I'm like, here's my packet. And he's like, all loud in the super quiet room, what's this? My record. Your what? My record. You know, I did go on to get my notary license. I did go on to get my real estate license. And then I got my CTEC license, which is means I'm licensed to do your taxes, which is kind of hilarious if you knew some of my charges. But I will say this. My favorite verse in the big book is in the doctor's opinion. And it says, later he requested the privilege of being allowed to tell his story to other patients here, and with some misgivings, we consented. The cases we have followed through have been most interesting. In fact, many of them are amazing. We all have an amazing story. I hope to God you don't have 39 felonies and 4 prison terms, but we all have an amazing story. And the great thing is that your story and your testimony can be used to touch a heart and change a life. It doesn't matter where you've come from or what you've done or what you haven't done. You know, the great thing is these inmates don't care what you've done. We don't care where you've been or haven't been, right? We don't need to exchange war stories with you. What we care about is, do you have a working knowledge of the big book? Do you know how to live a productive life? Are you a productive member of society? I mean, I had to be taught the most basic things. I had to be taught how to put the shopping cart back at the front of the store. And I had to have a detailed explanation as to why do we do that. It seemed pointless to me. You know, and to this day, I will not go to a store without returning the shopping cart all the way to the front, simply because it's the right thing to do. You know, my sponsor said, how many productive people do you know? And I said, I don't know. Do drug dealers count? She said, productive members of society take the shopping cart all the way back to the front of the store. And today, that's what I do. You know, this is an amazing and a beautiful life that I do not deserve. You know, what I can tell you is, if you're here and you have a panel, don't give up. Don't quit. Don't get frustrated because you think you're not getting through. Keep going month after month, week after week. When there's only two people that show up and they're not paying attention, or they interrupt you, or they talk over you, you're planting a seed. I'll end with this. I truly, truly believe with every fiber of my being, to the depths of my soul, that God has given me the keys to the kingdom. My keys will get rusty if I don't use them to free other people. My name is Michelle, and I am an alcoholic.